one soul ring.
There we go. Yeah, I tried to do it. I tried to do it pretty quick. They call me a little quick, actually.
Yeah.
That's what they call me. Oh, boy.
It's just efficient,
yeah, I don't
right?
like to do anything that's too... well, right there, that was an unnecessary pause that I just took. So that
talk
was,
smarter,
well,
not harder.
That's right. You know. There's always room for self-improvement. You know?
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. I'm Kevin.
I'm Riley.
And I'm Ainsley.
And today on the show, we are continuing our series explaining the events depicted in the Magic the Gathering novel, The Thran. In part one, we introduced our main characters, and Yawgmoth discovered the cause of the mysterious wasting disease that was afflicting Glaceon and many other Thran citizens. A disease he called phthisis, and one that he'd developed a serum for temporarily reversing the symptoms of. Part one also culminated in a riot led by Gix and perpetrated by the people living under Halcyon in the Caves of the Damned. Yawgmoth ended the riot by striking a deal with Gix, returned to the caves, and Yawgmoth would arrive a week later with enough serum to treat those afflicted with phthisis. And that's where we're picking things up today.
Pick it up.
So in the week that followed, Yawgmoth was hailed as the hero of Halcyon and was given even further power in tamping down the spread of phthisis. On top of that, he was given Glaceon's seat among the geniuses on the council. And you know what else? They had a parade for him.
Oh, cute.
Nice.
Yeah.
Do you think they had like a Yawgmoth float?
I was going to say, I bet it was just like a real gothy, like... dark parade.
It probably
that
was.
Would be his jam.
Yeah, yeah,
like a
all
nighttime
black
parade.
White.
You don't see those too often.
A night parade.
Yeah,
I like that.
That'd be good. It's like the Santa Claus parade, right? That happens at night.
Yep.
I don't think it does.
Well, like
oh,
in the
does.
Evening.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It usually starts
it's dark
five
by like 3 o'clock. So
yeah.
Yeah. So at the end of that celebration, he addressed the city, showing them a vial of serum and explaining how close he was to a cure. Then he made a vow to the people of Halcyon and the Damned.
This vial contains the hope for a final cure. I will find it. I will find a cure not only to Power Stone phthisis, but to every ailment that plagues us. I will find a cure not only for illness, but also for weakness, for madness, for old age, for depravity, for every failing of mortal flesh. The medicine I bring you will heal not only your bodies, minds, and souls, but even your mortality. I promise you no less than that.
I would love a cure for weakness.
That's big campaign promises there.
Yeah, yeah, it's a tall order. Yeah. But the people of Halcyon thought that if anybody could do it, Yawgmoth could.
I mean, I'd just legalize weed. Be like, don't worry, guys. Weed's legal now.
Yeah. Anyway, Yawgmoth was as good as his word, and a week after the riots, he was in the caves preparing to administer the first doses of serum. But he and Gix had to come to an understanding first. Gix was the leader of the Untouchables, and Yawgmoth wanted him to be his puppet below while he pulled the strings in Halcyon. He wanted Gix to say only good things about him so the Untouchables would praise him. Gix refused, claiming he'd rather die speaking the truth, but they both knew Gix was a survivor above all else. So Yawgmoth put it simply. And don't worry, guys, I'm not going to be doing Gix this episode.
There is no time for testing you again. If you do not serve me faithfully, I will deny serum to you and your people.
We will rebel again.
They will not follow you. You have no cure, only anger.
It's kind of tempting to do the right?
No, totally. I like this. I feel like this little exchange is like very pertinent even to like the current situation in our world. Mm-hmm. There's no time for testing you people. No. We will rebel again. Yeah. You have no cure, only anger.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, all right, we're just going to lift the restrictions then.
Yeah. Have at it.
And he was right. So Gix agreed and his people received the serum. So I just mentioned Yawgmoth was given more power at this point in the story. And as far as the spread of phthisis went, he created a special infirmary in the Caves of the Damned. And as he administered the serum to the Untouchables, the ones that improved enough were allowed to integrate back into Halcyte society. Those Halcyites found to be afflicted by phthisis were cast into the caves until their symptoms improved. Not only that, but their belongings and property were given to those newly arrived untouchables.
Oof.
Which always makes everybody happy. Yawgmoth was also given carte blanche to go house to house searching for any signs of disease, while citizens were encouraged to report anyone they suspected of suffering from phthisis. Yawgmoth was also assigned to a committee to restructure the city's guard and military because, let's face it, they sucked. And over the following several months, Yawgmoth became an essential part of Halcyon's continued success, both at controlling the spread of phthisis and dissent. Unfortunately, as the diseased were treated with the serum, Glacian's condition did not improve. Mm-hmm. You guys surprised by that? That his condition didn't improve? It's kind of like the...
I'm shocked.
the ongoing trope here. And that was especially odd because he received over and above the amount of serum of any other Halcyite, which just meant that Yawgmoth worked even harder to figure out why Glacian's case was unique. As Rebecca watched him do that, she became more and more infatuated with him, trading one genius for another.
Yeah, why would Yawgmoth actually cure him? Because he has his seat on the genius council and he's probably going to bang his wife.
Yeah, why are you even visiting him, Rebecca? He's gross.
He's like, oh no, he's not getting healed. What should I do?
I'll just work harder. And she's like, oh great, I'll watch you while you work.
Just like stabs him a couple of times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, he's bleeding out. How did this happen?
So the phthisis wasn't just spreading in Halcyon. It had become a problem in the other 6 Thran city-states. Or I think it's 7, actually. My mistake there, guys. Which meant Yawgmoth was allowed to bring dozens more of his fellow eugenicists out of exile to help deal with the spread. He'd spent months traveling to each Thran city-state with a different core of eugenicists to deploy and train the local healers in creating a serum and administering it to the populace. And he'd also installed a similar system to Halcyon in each city. Lacking a series of caves to put the diseased, the other city-states put their phthisis-stricken population into camps.
Mm-hmm.
He'd done all this with Rebecca in tow, who spent those months studying the architecture of each city and basically accepting everything Yawgmoth was doing as the cost of stopping the spread of phthisis. And we've experienced a little bit of that.
I was going to say, this is just hitting just like, I'll just... so close to home. It's like, I will do whatever you say, just make this thing stop.
Yeah. They didn't, though, did they? So, she also kissed Yawgmoth, but Yawgmoth, who'd been stringing her along for the last few years, acted like it didn't mean anything and just got back to work.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So she's like, I can't help it. I need to give you a smoochie. And he's like, eh, I've had better.
Yeah, probably. He's probably been making out with, like, minotaurs and stuff, but, like, just their severed heads. You know, yeah, just weird stuff weird like shit. That. Yeah. He seems like a really weird guy. So while all that was going on, Glacian made a delicious discovery about power stones. Using complex calculations and his intimate knowledge of the devices, he discovered that when a power stone was charged, a plane was created inside of it.
Interesting. Weird. When you said he made a delicious discovery and then it went on to say using complex, I thought you were going to say like using complex carbohydrates. It's like, mmm, delicious.
And no, he's not going to walk again. So the planes that were created were not tiny like you'd expect. They were rather planes of almost infinite size and possibilities.
Wow.
So on their return to Halcyon, Yawgmoth and Rebecca learned of Glacian's discovery, but they both shot it down because even though it made sense, they had no way to travel to the planes he discovered. By this point in the story, it had been months since Yawgmoth had allowed any healthy untouchable out of the caves, although he'd sent a steady stream of diseased Halcyites into them, which upset Gix. The leader of the damned also suspected that Yawgmoth was diluting the serum because his symptoms had worsened and his body was deteriorating once again. He shared his suspicions with his inner circle, and they planned to rebel once again.
Mm.
Rebel. That's what we should have done. And so they did. They began pouring out of the gutters like rats, and by that point, Halcyon had actually outlawed the term untouchable to describe the cave dwellers, but it had been changed to something worse, referring to them as the damned, which I think is like a cooler name, actually.
Yeah.
That'd be a good band name, the damned.
It probably is a band name, if I was to guess.
I'm sure it is.
It probably is, yeah. It's probably taken. So, over the following months, Gix led healthy refugees up from the caves 26 times for a total of 120 escaped people. The Council of Elders couldn't tolerate this and met with Yawgmoth once again. Turns out Yawgmoth was giving the damned diluted serum, so Gix was right. The serum required precious metals, and they were expensive. He explained that unless he got the funding for full-strength serum, the damned would continue to climb, and even if he did, they still might riot again.
What a dummy.
He motioned that if they did riot again, he'd be given temporary command of the newly trained Halcyte Guard. And just, like, never do that, just for the record. Like, never give your military to some, you know, somebody that's not a part of the power structure. It's just a bad idea. So they voted, and what do you know? Yawgmoth got everything he wanted again. So Gix didn't know any of this and just kept on leading refugees to the streets. But on his 27th trip, his gut told him that death waited above. He and his people had climbed for 5 hours to reach the surface, but Gix warned them they should go back. While they waited to emerge from the grate, Gix explained, "Eh."
"I just have the sense that if you go through that gate, any grate tonight, you will die."
"I'd rather die than trying to escape than..." Oh, sorry.
"I'd rather try."
I'd rather fumble this line. "I'd rather die trying to escape than go back down."
The rest of the Untouchables agreed and pushed past Gix. He held open the grate as the other five men scurried through it to the street above. Then he wished them luck and closed it. Then, five quick flashes of dagger light and the unmistakable smell of blood. The Untouchables had been killed by a group of Thran clothed in black from head to toe. Groups like this were part of Yawgmoth's new campaign to pacify the Untouchables. Yawgmoth himself happened to be leading this group, and on that particular night, he was looking for Gix. As they searched the bodies, a Thran woman said,
"None of these have phthisis. Are you sure their leader does?"
"Yes. Just as sure as I am that he is lurking still in the sewer."
"Should we go after him?"
"No, you'll not catch him. Besides, he is useful to me. Predictable. He'll lead more refugees up here. We'll capture each batch. The council will grant us more soldiers, more funding. He is useful to me alive. These five are useful dead. The first fruits of the new campaign. The council will be pleased."
Pleased.
Fruit.
Please me, daddy.
Gix, listen.
Yeah, Roz.
Gix listened to it all, afraid to move, lest the patter of water betray him. He stayed until the assassins hauled away the dead and realized the trickle falling on his back was blood.
Oh, no. It's not fruit juice.
Oh, fruit juice.
Always fruit together.
That's good. That's Goof Troop.
That is
classic.
Yeah.
That near-death incident didn't stop Gix from leading bands of Untouchables to the surface. He was just more careful going forward. By that point in the story, Glacian had truly become the sickest man in the Thran Empire, but not in the cool way that we say something is sick or like ever sick.
Ever sick. Ever
sick boy. So his skin would slough off at a touch, his fingernails Ugh. Split and peeled away, Ugh. His hair fell out in clumps when you tried to brush it, probably. Under his own weight, his mind had split in two. Not literally, of course, but his memory was full of holes. What he could remember was bitter arguments and long loneliness among machines and goblins. Yawgmoth still inundated him with a steady stream of serum, but his true caretakers were a half dozen goblins that service the devices that breathe for him. Because of the breathing and feeding apparatus, his own design, actually, his speech was garbled, with only Rebecca and the goblins able to understand him. And on this particular occasion, he was ordering his goblins to apply more pressure to the bellows as he was losing consciousness. They either couldn't understand him, or they weren't quick enough. This was the eighth time this had occurred, actually. But when Glacian regained consciousness, he discovered a woman standing in his room. He immediately knew it wasn't Rebecca, even though she resembled his wife's physique. Oh, yeah. She always wore coveralls, and this woman was wearing tight black leggings with snake motifs coiling around them.
Oh my God, where can I get a pair?
No kidding. She also wore an embroidered vest with ivory inlays and a silken neck scarf with beads braided into her hair. After his eyes adjusted to the light, he noticed that her complexion was far darker than his fair wife's. The woman had already shooed the goblins from the room and shut the door, and Glacian garbled nonsensically. Before you do the line, like, so in the book, like, it's just his lines. They don't make any effort to make him sound like, you can understand him. So it's just kind of funny. So, like, Riley, just, you know, do whatever you do.
Who are you? What are you doing here?
I knew you were convalescing. I did not realize how convalescent you had become.
Who are you?
She approached his wheelchair, explaining she'd heard his theory about power stones and planes, confirming them to be true. And Glacian just asked who she was again, nonsensically, of course.
Who are you?
I am Diefed. I was once like you, very like you, except for the disease. I was once human and brilliant and misunderstood by all those around me. Now I am human no longer. Now I am a planeswalker.
Now I am woman.
I was once like you, except I didn't have a disease.
The word meant nothing to Glacian, but Diefed explained that Dominaria was only one of millions of worlds, and she could travel to any one of them, and...
I'd hoped to take you on a tour of the plains. I was once Thran. I've been waiting for the first of my people to discover these things. But the journey is perilous for even a healthy mortal. I couldn't take you in this shape. Any other disease I could heal, but you've seen what arcane energies do to Power Stone Thysis.
To this, Glacian just looked at her in disbelief.
What?
So Diefed decided to demonstrate. You know what, something just occurred to me, like, if he's such a great artificer and, like, no one can understand what he's saying, why didn't he create some kind of, like, device, you know, like Stephen Hawking uses, where he just types and then the device talks for him?
Because he's convalescent.
Yeah, but he just gives them the plans and then somebody else does it. So anyways, I think it would have made more sense for the story, but regardless, Diefed disappeared from the room and reappeared in an instant, holding an orchid native to the plain of Pyrulia and found nowhere on Dominaria. Glacian didn't say anything to this, but Yawgmoth did. Turns out he'd been listening in with the devices he'd installed in Glacian's room, devices he claimed were there to make sure the artificer didn't die unnoticed. He claimed he'd seen the same flower when traveling in Jamora, so he presented the freshly wounded arm he'd just received from the war in the streets, more like war in the sheets, with the Untouchables. Diefed placed her hand on the open wound and healed it in seconds. But he still didn't believe her, claiming any competent healer could do the same, so she planeswalked with Yawgmoth to Pyrulia, and there was no further doubt.
Hang on. Just that. She just, like, took him? I don't know. I guess planeswalking in the early novels must have been a little loosey. But I think it's harder now in the current lore to planeswalk with something that's not a planeswalker.
Yeah, like the I'm pretty sure I've read this somewhere, but like the more old like the pre-mending planeswalkers were more powerful, Urza.
Okay.
Than like the post-mending planeswalkers, cuz now they're everywhere, right?
Yeah.
But they just like in the artifact cycle books, where Urza is the sort of more the main character, when he planeswalks with people, he can like, he either has to like turn them into something else that's like non-organic, or like with Zancha, he gives her that like that thing that she can create a shell over herself so she doesn't die. And that's what Diefed does. She just creates like a protective shell. So maybe she was more powerful than Urza. Who knows? They don't say. So just then, Rebecca walked in and Glacian explained where they'd gone. She's probably like, oh my God, why do I keep visiting this guy? So several more months passed, and throughout that time, Gix continued to lead more bands of untouchables up to the streets until Halcyon had a full-scale riot on their hands once more.
Oh, shit.
By that point, Yawgmoth's healers... I guess I just kind of like skipped over what happened with Diphed and Yawgmoth. Well, anyways.
She took him there, and he was like, I believe you.
Yeah,
like,
and that then, was it. Yeah, then she took him back, and anyway.
Bob's your uncle.
Yeah, so by that point, Yawgmoth's healers... and new Halcyte guards had been fully trained, and their first priority, if a riot broke out, was to protect and fortify the infirmary. Mm. While the streets were falling apart, the elders of Halcyon's council arrived on the roof of the infirmary, seeing it as the only safe place in the city. Yawgmoth greeted them and prompted the eldest of them, Jameth, to give him full command of the Halcyte guard per their agreement. So she did, only for as long as the riot lasted, though. It's a good caveat. Also, Jameth is a really great name for a cat, if anyone is Jameth having trouble. Jameth is a
great name, period.
That's too bad we're not having any more kids.
Hey,
Jameth. Works for a boy or a girl.
I like it.
Or a really old man. Or in this case, a woman. Just in this case, it's a lady. But whether the riot ended or not, Yawgmoth would never give up control. Then that's a lesson for everybody. Never give up control. So... even though his plans hadn't fully come to fruition, in fact, he still hadn't fully realized his plans because he wasn't yet immortal, this was really the point where the people of Halcyon and the Thren Empire could have stopped Yawgmoth.
Coulda, woulda, shoulda.
And it's also, this actually also occurs on chapter 15, which is halfway through the novel, so it's a nice little time to just, we could just roll credits right here, and that's the story. But we're not going to. So, Jameth and the other elders were right to seek shelter in the Halcyte Infirmary, and Yawgmoth led them from the roof and showed them what else he had planned. First was an anti-serum he'd concocted. When it entered the victim's body, it would leach any particle of metal from their system, causing phthisis in the uninfected and lethally accelerating the disease in the infected. And he doused every healer's and guard's sword with the anti-serum. Which kind of makes me think of X-Men 2, you know, when Magneto escapes and he takes all the iron out of that guy?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Second was a small schematic of the city littered with tiny power stones. He explained that with this, he could control every door, shutter, light, and entranceway in Halcyon. He'd also equipped both healer and guard with new power stone-equipped armor. Power armor. A power stone was placed in the helm of each suit and allowed him to communicate with any of his men with a thought. Or women, because there are ladies too. It was at this point that Eldest Jameth realized what we just explained. Yawgmoth was in complete control of the city, and they had given it to him.
Shit.
Yeah. I should pipe in one of those CSI Miami. Yeah! Yeah. Right there. Rather, it's like I gotta go watch CSI Miami.
Just listen to the Who.
So by that point, Gix and his band of almost 100 untouchables had reached the infirmary, and that's when they realized they were trapped.
It's a trap.
Groups of healers and Halcyte guards closed off every street behind and ahead of them. Gix realized this sooner than the rest of his people and was able to escape with two others. They would be the only untouchables that would survive the encounter. 60-some trained, armed, and armored fighters closed in on the unarmed mob of untouchables, and what followed was a slaughter. Yawgmoth wasn't in the habit of taking prisoners, unless he was going to experiment on them. Just kind of strange. You'd think he'd want prisoners to...
Prisoners are impractical.
Yeah, definitely. Gix didn't stick around to watch the massacre, and he split up from his comrades. He found himself being chased by a newly armored Halcyte guard, and when he was just about to be caught, he found a derelict sedan chair and flew away. But then he decided to turn back and crash the chair into the pursuing guard, killing him. After that, he stripped the armor from the guard, put it on, and took his weapons. He had a new plan to take the city.
Huh.
Kill as many guards as he could in his new disguise, and disguise any untouchable he found along the way. But because Yawgmoth had eyes and ears all over the city, he knew what Gix was up to and let his men know about the ruse.
Man, Yawgmoth's just on top of everything.
Yeah, you gotta hand it to the guy. Doesn't make a lot of mistakes. Mm-mm. Gix was still able to cause quite a bit of damage before Yawgmoth could communicate with every detachment under his command, though. The riots lasted most of the day, and near the end, more than 1,000 Halcyites and 4,000 Untouchables had been killed. And by that point, Gix knew he couldn't win, so he was heading back to the caves and spreading the word that other Untouchables should do the same. Because Gix still wore the guard's helm, Yawgmoth could track him, and he ordered all his men to converge on the route Gix was taking back to the caves. He also ordered them to follow the damned into the caves to exact punishment on them.
Huh, exactly.
Wink! Rebecca protested this, reminding him there were still citizens down there in the quarantine caves, and Yawgmoth assured her the invalids would not be harmed, but the murderers that caused the riot had to be eradicated. Oh boy. Then he put the Power Stone schematic away, leaving the fate of the damned up to the Halcyite Guard and its captains. He reached into the clothes to reveal a blue amulet that hung around his neck.
This is a gift from a friend. An amulet that allows me to call her in grievous times.
He squeezed the amulet, and just like that, Dyfed appeared. The gathered elders and Rebecca were startled, and eldest Jameth asked if she was some kind of wizard. Wizard! To which Yawgmoth replied,
no.
Wizard!
Wizard! No, she's far grander than a wizard. Dyfed is a new breed. She is the living manifestation of human destiny. Though she was born human, she is now as different from us as we are from animals.
So that's not a great comparison, but, you know, what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. So he further explained that she was a planeswalker and what he understood that to mean. He digressed and offered that Dyfed give them a demonstration, a tour of some of the planes she'd visited. She first took them to a plane that sounds suspiciously like Mars, especially since they would not be able to breathe if she completely dissolved the protective envelope she had formed around the group to survive the blind eternities. Or the bastard plane, as she referred to it, which is my new favorite name for the blind eternities.
Bastard plane. You have no parents.
Yeah.
No, it's just your parents weren't married when you were conceived. Oh, that's right. Like, Violet's a bastard.
Well, duh, yeah, because anyone would have parents. What am I saying?
Yeah. Come on. So she next took them to a plane that was nothing but purple clouds they floated through. Then she took them to a forest plane where they could walk and breathe, although most of them fell to their knees once released because they were so old. No, it was just the effect of that planeswalking had on most first-timers. I also kind of imagine it's like disapparating in Harry Potter. Like, the first time it happens, you probably, like, get sick. So Yawgmoth was the only one that remained standing because he leaned on Dyfed, and he went on leaning.
I have asked Dyfed to find me a paradise, a perfect plane, and make a permanent portal to get from Halcyon. The caves of the damned will become a doorway to our paradise. The first who will dwell therein are our own infirm. Folk made ill by Power Stone Physis will move into a virgin world, safe from Ravagan magic. They will be cured. Once they are, they will open the world to the rest of our us for colonization. Yes, elders, I promised to end the riots, and have done so. I promised to eradicate the Physis, and I am doing so. I promised to elevate our race into divinity, to bring us to a perfect world in which even death will hold no sway. This day is the first step towards that glorious new world.
Like a virgin.
Yeah, it's gonna be shiny and new.
Planned for the first time.
Some of the elders were amazed, wow, and some were horrified. Oh. In either case, Dyfed returned them to Dominaria safely and began her search for Yawgmoth's paradise.
His virgin paradise.
Anyway, Yawgmoth was true to his word because the only untouchables to survive the riot were those in the quarantine cavern. Those with Thysis. Save for Gix, of course. It was among the sick the guards found him. Also, does anyone know what Ravagan magic is? Because that's kind of a funny one. If anyone knows, send us a message. It should have been like Ragavan or whatever that monkey creature is called. That'd
Ravagan.
Be fun.
Yeah, Ragavan.
Ravaged by war and Thysis, he laid in a dark alcove, still wearing Power Stone armor and clutching his swords. When the guards surrounded him and disarmed him, he made no attempt to stop them. That's when Yawgmoth strode into the alcove and stood above Gix, his sword hovered above his throat.
Why don't you go ahead and kill me?
It's like, because you're not a virgin.
Whether or not you realize it, Gix, you are my puppet. You have been my puppet for years. I knew you would rise to lead your people. Your idealism runs deep, but not as deep as your fear of death. It makes you utterly predictable. But I have no more need for a puppet.
Then why don't you go ahead and kill me?
A puppet, no. But a servant, yes. Like all of us, Gix, you must ascend to survive. You must climb out of your former skin. It is too small for you now. Take command of your strings. Vow your loyalty to me and live.
If I am only a puppet, then why don't you just make me vow?
That is what I'm doing.
Yawgmoth stared at Gix for a moment before raising his sword for the killing blow.
Wait! I will swear it. I will serve you. Loyally. Forever.
And that's what he did.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Just like that. Well, we know the...
And just like that.
BFFs.
How easy is that? if you want to go back and find out Gix's final fate, I think that was in our Planeswalker series with Sancha and Retepe. You guys remember Retepe?
Retepe.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard not to give it a little twang. Rat, as he was called for short.
I miss Rat.
Yeah, R.I.P. Rat. So, after that, Yawgmoth's health core workers removed the dead and started the work of turning the caverns into a state-of-the-art infirmary where the effects of Thysis could be studied away from prying eyes. Then he wandered around, caressing the walls, until he found the spot Dife had mentioned, a place at the end of a long tunnel nestled in the bedrock, surrounded by solid basalt. It was actually where Gix used to hang his hat, and probably caress the same walls. Caressing walls is weird, everybody. Come on. But Yawgmoth decided Dyfed would use it to make a portal to paradise.
Hey, we're not kink shaming here. If you want to love on walls,
that's true. That's you're right. Love you're not. Right. You're right.
Is this me?
So over the no.
Okay.
God damn it.
There was a pause. I wasn't sure.
It was a valid question, that's Riley.
Fair. That's fair. You're so diplomatic.
Yes.
I'm just like, no.
That's why we work well together. If we were both like, no, everyone would hate us. We'd have no friends.
I think I'm also a little high strung because I already shoveled this morning and I'm going to go out and shovel after this.
It looks like a snow globe
out
there.
I'm really tired of shoveling.
Yeah, I feel you.
So I don't like shoveling snow to begin with, but... My God, this winter.
Yeah, there's like a snowbank. There's a snowbank that's formed like right at the edge of our deck where the dogs have to like, you know, hop off the deck. And it's at the point where it's like I give up and they literally just climb the snowbank and they seem to enjoy it. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we've got that going on too. But
we don't have a backyard. We have a hill.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yeah, exactly.
So over the following several months, she searched the multiverse for just such a location. During that period, the work to transform the quarantine caverns into a state-of-the-art medical facility was completed, while above, Halcyon was rebuilt. And at this point in the story, it's probably like 7-8 years have passed. So, like, since the beginning of the story, since Yawgmoth came back to Halcyon.
Wow.
So the whole book takes place over a decade.
Hmm.
So, And I, like, it's split up into four parts. So at the very beginning of the book, part one, like at the beginning of each part, there's like a chapter that's just called, like, you know, part one, part two, etc. And that's like the, it goes forward like to the end of the story. And it's like, this is what's happening now. And then, you know, you go back to where you were. So they like to do that with these books. There's a lot of like time, like, I don't know what you'd call it. It makes what I do a lot more complicated, just doing a linear story. So by this point, Rebecca's temple had been rushed to completion, and the day had arrived for its dedication, which also happened to be the first day of the Feast of Victories, which is some kind of Thran celebration. I'm not really clear on it. So as Yawgmoth and many of Halcyon's citizens saw it, there was much to celebrate. The end of incursions from below, or also known as upward incursions. The imminent demise of Thysis, the completion of the temple, and the hope of Yawgmoth's paradise.
That's going to be us in like 2 weeks when it's like, okay.
It's lifted.
It's all done. Not. Anyway.
Yeah, I could do without some of these upward incursions. So on top of all that, Jaymith and many others in the Elder Council believed that the celebration would also be the perfect ceremonial moment for Yawgmoth to relinquish the reins of the military. But like I mentioned earlier, that would never happen. Despite the strange group of ambassadors that arrived in Halcyon a week prior, there were 25 in total, and a mixture of leaders from Dwarven, Elven, Catfolk, Minotaurs, Vyashino, and the Thran city-states of Losannon and Wington. Hmm. Remember those atrocities Yawgmoth committed while in exile?
Oh, I remember.
At the top. Turns out the leaders of those factions had formed an alliance and pulled Losannon and Wington to their side before heading to Halcyon to demand Yawgmoth's extradition to stand trial for his crimes. They don't say exactly where he would have been extradited to, but they did fill the Elder Council of Halcyon in on his list of crimes committed against the people representing the non-human members of the delegation. Unfortunately, they didn't have any proof, so like any civilized society, they voted on Yawgmoth's fate once again. The Elder Councils from the other city-states were gathered, and they voted. It came down to a tie, but because Yawgmoth and Rebecca were also on the council, they voted against extradition, and Yawgmoth got to stay while his gaze pinned down those who had opposed him one by one. And he's got a little like notebook out.
Oh, I bet he does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I always do that at meetings at work. Like, I'm like writing down everyone who disagrees with me.
Yeah. No.
So in the face of that result, the Alliance, what would come to be known as the Thran Alliance, threatened to declare war on Halcyon and its allies if it did not strip Yawgmoth of his power
and his clothes.
Oh, God.
It wasn't even written.
Being in almost complete control of the capital, he wasn't about to give up anything, and so the war began. The Thran Empire against an alliance of dwarves, elves, minotaurs, cat people, lizard men, and women. Well, they always refer to them as men in the book. They don't say lizard they.
Lizard folk.
Yeah, lizard or lizard people. Lizard folk, yeah.
Lizard folk is good.
Yeah. And the three rebellious Thran city-states, Losannon, Wington, and Chignon. It's a funny one.
That's the name of a side bun that you can do in your hair.
Oh, a chignon. Cool.
That's how you pronounce it, but yeah.
And I don't think I mentioned it, but like as part of this whole situation, Chignon was one of the cities that the Thran Alliance like won over, saying Yawgmoth is a POS.
That's a chignon.
Oh, that's a cool chignon.
Well, how does Wikipedia say to pronounce that? I really don't think it's Chignon.
Well, that's how the guy reading the audiobook said it. So.
It's a French word.
But he also said orchid, so
can we really trust him? Oh, my God. Yeah, he cannot.
That's a red flag.
And matriarch?
Oh.
That's another one.
Why do you have this person reading?
Hey, he's just a fan. Yeah. He's just a fan.
Yikes.
So enough about Chignon. After that came the celebration. Rebecca was too shaken by the council meeting to give her address to dedicate the Thran Temple. So Yawgmoth made his address first. He explained what had just occurred to the people of Halcyon and went on to say,
"In this time of crisis, when the world has declared war on us, and three of our own city-states have initiated civil war, I have no choice but to dissolve the council and assume control over the nation."
Great speech. That's a real good Palpatine vibes.
That's a good speech.
Then the book says he utterly ignored the screams, which is kind of funny.
Oh, no!
Then Yawgmoth ordered his health corps and Halcyte guard to escort people to their homes to keep the city free of panic, and gave the same order to his forces in the other four city-states still loyal to the Empire. While ordering the Halcyte guard and health corps in the rebel city-states to retreat being captured or killed. He also imprisoned the elders of the rebel city-states that had come to vote and the ambassadors of the non-human factions, threatening to execute them if Halcyon or any imperial location was attacked by the Alliance. It's a good threat. Then he got to work preparing for war. For Rebecca's part, she obviously didn't believe the claims made by the non-human delegation, but she was against imprisoning the nearly 100 elders from the rebel city-states. So she covertly stole the blue amulet Dyfed had given to Yawgmoth and paid Glaceon a visit. She really likes visiting this guy. Maybe she likes, like, taking care of him. Like, if either of you were in this state, probably not getting any visits from me.
Oh.
Maybe I'll mail you a box. I'll mail you a pot of gold or something.
Like a box of pot of gold chocolates?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's nice.
That's what you do with, like, really old people in homes, right? You just send them candy.
I mean, I'm not going to complain.
Yeah, you're probably going to be visiting my mom when she's really old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll be like, Kevin sends his love.
So we mentioned earlier that Glaceon couldn't be understood by any except Rebecca and his goblins. And every interaction he has in the book after that just seems like super funny. You know, he's trying to have a conversation with his wife and he's drooling and bleeding and he's just a mess. Like, it's just, oh, God. They really don't paint that picture, but based on how they describe what his physical state is like, that's what it seems like. Like, if she was like, oh, you know, and like pets his hair, she just gets like a clump of it. Oh, like, oh, God.
Poor guy.
Anyway, the two use the amulet to summon Dyfed. Suddenly being pulled away from Yawgmoth's quest upset her, but when she saw who'd summoned her, she was furious.
Don't make me mad.
Yeah, that's not really in the book, but I just wanted you to say
that.
Oh
my God.
That's like a thing. That's like an inside joke. Don't make me mad.
Oh, okay. Well, so, I said it wrong.
Yeah, that's okay.
Because I thought it was a real line. Silly me.
I guess I could do that, hey?
Yeah, just throw in fake lines, make us say shit. Yeah.
So they asked her to rescue the imprisoned elders of the rebel city-states. She rebuffed the request and asked if they were truly on Yawgmoth's side. Because why would they want to rebel? Why would they want the rebel leaders returned to their cities to wage war? Rebecca assured the planeswalker she was loyal to Yawgmoth, while Glaceon gargled in his chair.
He's using some scope, green or something. Riley.
It's like, can we put this guy in a closet or something? Rebecca explained that she didn't want the elders returned to their cities, but taken to another plane entirely until they were no longer in danger. Glaceon added that they wouldn't survive on their own on a foreign, potentially harsh plane. These were high society people we're talking about. They could build neither fire nor lean-to. And if I'm being perfectly honest, I don't think I could build a fire.
From nothing?
From nothing? Mm. No, I could do a pretty good lean-to, though. So Glaceon suggested a group of goblins should go with them to care for them. Dyfed agreed. 100 elders and 100 goblins made the trip to Mercadia, and it's unclear if those goblins were the progenitors of the Kirin we got to know during our Mercadian Masks series.
Oh, interesting.
What I can tell you is that everyone Dyfed ferried to Mercadia spent the rest of their lives there because she never went back for them. So.
Alrighty then.
R.I.P. elders. Shortly after that, Yawgmoth found the couple in Glacian's room and explained that the genius of Halcyon would be moving to the quarantine caves where he could receive new and aggressive treatments. While Glacian's goblins and a contingent of Halcyite guards ferried the invalid to the quarantine caves, Yawgmoth professed his love for Rebecca while she railed against her husband's condition.
Why don't you cure him? Why doesn't your serum work for my husband?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. From the beginning, his case has been different.
You've made it different. You don't want him to recover.
Oh, I do, Rebecca. I do. I need him to be well. I need him to be able to fight me. I need him to be able to fight me for your hand. I will not steal the wife of an invalid.
Don't do this. Don't toy with me. I've been through too much.
But he kept on toying with her. Surprise, surprise. It's like, I will toy with you. Anyway, when Glacian arrived in the quarantine caves, he discovered what I mentioned earlier, that Yawgmoth had transformed them into a state-of-the-art medical facility where the patients were no longer plague victims in quarantine. They'd become test subjects that could be considered the earliest Phyrexians.
Cool.
Glacian studied each augmented person as he was carried to one of the larger healing capsules Gix had prepared for him. Large enough to accommodate a guy in a chair. You're going to put a guy in a chair in a healing capsule? Come on. Then Gix rolled him in and set it and forget it.
Oh my god.
Ron Popeil, everybody. Glacian remained in the caves for the following several months. And during that time, this is what the book says. It keeps saying like several months. It's like, what is that meme? It's like a...
I think seven.
Sorry?
I usually think seven when someone says several.
Several?
It's just more than three.
Mm. Yeah, I was thinking more in like the realm of two or three.
Or is several more than four?
Three is a few.
Three is a crowd.
Yeah, but who uses... Okay, if somebody wants to be specific about the number of months passing, they're not just going to loosey-goosey say several. You know what I mean?
Several. It's been several months. Yeah, no, not if you want to be specific. So, during that time, Yawgmoth outfitted Halcyon and the other loyal city-states with all manner of projectile weapons for their defenses.
Pew, pew!
The ironic thing was, all the defensive weapons being fabricated and mounted were designed by Glacian. In his frequent feverish dream states, Yawgmoth would begin a design on a weapon and leave the half-finished plans in Glacian's room. Then Glacian would finish them, thinking he'd also started them.
Oh, interesting. So he could craft himself a little Stephen Hawking-style thingamajog.
Mm-hmm. Or just a series of beeps like R2-D2?
Wow!
Anyway, one sunny afternoon, while Yawgmoth was showing Rebecca around Halcyon's defenses, Dyfed appeared. She had found Yawgmoth's paradise.
Am I interrupting something?
Have you found it?
Yes. Would you like to come see?
Is it perfect?
9 separate spheres, each with a unique ecology.
Is it extensive?
The land space is as large as your empire was before the rebellion, and with work it can be twice that, or thrice that.
Is it beautiful?
Isn't sexual. Yeah.
It's like, dude, why don't you just go see?
Yeah. Is it pretty?
He's like,
is
it gotta be good.
Is it shiny?
And just like that, Dyfed swept Yawgmoth and Rebecca to another world. They arrived on the outermost or first sphere of the artificial plane. It was covered in an old growth forest under a blue sky. Trees 20 feet wide and hundreds of feet tall, with huge serpents coiled around their bows. There wasn't a single machine in sight, which meant there wasn't a single power stone. Yawgmoth planned to bring every Thysis-stricken citizen to the new plane and away from the power stones and their radiation. In truth, though, he wanted a place where he could experiment on and perfect all Thran people without oversight, which is what he was already doing in the quarantine caves, only on a much smaller scale. Then Dyfed ferried them to the second sphere, which was made almost completely of metal and supported the first sphere. Unlike the first sphere, this one was quite dim, the only light coming from the metal reflecting off itself. Yawgmoth also discovered living creatures on that level, albeit creatures entirely composed of artifice, living machines that required no power stone to function. Then Dyfed took them to the third sphere, which was nothing but pipes, some miles wide. She explained this level supplied the others with everything needed to sustain themselves, replicating the workings of a natural plane, which I guess means that every natural plane has, like, pipes inside of it? I don't know. Rebecca asked if she had created the plane, but Dyfed explained,
"No, though I thank you for the compliment. No, this place was created by an ancient and powerful planeswalker. It was his life's work."
She went on to explain that she did not know the planeswalker's name, but that he was originally human. He preferred to assume the form of a dragon, and he created the serpents seen on the first sphere in his image. Hmm. The only other thing she knew about him was that he died a month earlier. His body still rotted in the ninth sphere, which was why the plane was up for grabs. Yawgmoth wanted to see the one who'd created the plane, but first, Dyfed took them to the next level, the fourth sphere. She called it the furnace level, and it was covered in inactive factories and mile-high incinerators. Next was the fifth sphere, just a sea of oil. Then came the sixth sphere, a sea of barbed wire, grass, and a sky of pure white. The seventh sphere was an eternal furnace, hotter than a star. Dyfed had to use a protective shell to surround Yawgmoth and Rebecca during their brief visit.
That's also a good band name. Hotter than a star.
Mm-hmm. The seventh sphere was an eternal furnace. They skipped over the eighth sphere as it was a plane of pure energy, and that's really all we know about it. Lastly, and possibly most importantly, was the ninth sphere. It was no bigger than Yawgmoth's laboratory in the Halcyte Infirmary, and when the three arrived, it was pitch black and silent. The air stank of rotting flesh coming from the dead planeswalker. Dyfed explained that the ninth sphere was the control center of the world, and that with the death of its master a month earlier, the world would slowly die after him, unless the world welcomed a new master to take the former's place. All they had to do was clear the corpse away, and Yawgmoth could control the plane.
Eight spheres for the city-states, and the ninth for Yawgmoth.
If you link this plane to a power stone, you can use it to create a permanent portal from Halcyon.
That is the plan.
It will be a world of progressive generation, of Phyrexis. It will be called Phyrexia.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Okay, that's the end of the story.
No.
So, Dyfed took Rebecca back to Halcyon while he prepared Phyrexia for the Thysis Stricken. During that period, he also immersed himself in the ninth sphere, learning to control and connect to everything on each sphere of the plane. I think there's actually, like, a really cool graphic on the, I don't know, like, the Magic Fandom website where you can see, like, all the, like, the diagram of all the spheres and, like, the breakdown, if anyone's interested. So, he also discovered a mysterious chamber. Dyfed explained the former master of Phyrexia had used it to become the god of the plane, giving him unbridled control and supervision over each sphere and their inhabitants, not to mention immortality. Yawgmoth wanted to use the chamber, but Dyfed explained that it would be perilous for one without the planeswalker spark. By that point, Yawgmoth had dissected every part of the dead planeswalker's body and had found no biological difference between him and any other human. He assumed that because of this, anyone could become a planeswalker, assuming that everything could be explained through science, but as so often the case, the multiverse is not black and white. Dyfed explained that the spark was not something one could attain. It was the seed of greatness that one was born with, and only one in a billion had it. She said one walker could detect another, even one that had not yet ignited. That was how she tracked down Glaceon, and that was how she knew Yawgmoth was not one. Is that funny?
Yeah, it's funny. He's like, haha, you're not one.
But he entered the chamber anyway and performed the ritual. The novel explains it as if his consciousness moved through every particle of Phyrexia, and when it was over, he had complete control, which really isn't surprising that he survived. But he's only immortal, and he only has that kind of like godlike power on Phyrexia. Mm. Once he travels back to Dominaria, he's just a man.
He's just a man. He's not a hero.
Oh, he's not a hero. Uh-uh. No. Regardless, she spent those months opening and stabilizing the portal in the quarantine caves. Yawgmoth had used Glacian's plans to build a power stone that would be able to keep the portal open. It was a single stone that was separated after the portal was opened and stabilized. The only way to close the portal was to bring the stones back together. And if you remember back to our Brothers War series, that's the Might Stone and the Weak Stone that we're talking about. Hmm. So while all that was going on, the war continued, and another allied city-state fell to the Thran Alliance with another one to follow. Yawgmoth wasn't worried, though. Any attack against Halcyon would have to cross the Defile. Then Yawgmoth would have them right where he wanted them, in the desert. Before that could happen, though, Yawgmoth and Rebek paid Glacian a visit in the quarantine caves. He'd been there for several months, and by that point, he was the only one left. The others had been taken to Phyrexia to be perfected. And that's a little image of, you know, a Phyrexian. Or a guy getting, God knows what. 999 in total, with more arriving every day. Yawgmoth had already begun the process to turn them into the Phyrexians that most of us are familiar with. Not yet a mixture of artifice and flesh, but people that looked more like sinuous, hairless bears.
Oh, oof. Boy.
More importantly, though, Yawgmoth had implanted or had members of his health corps implant small power stones in the thighs of each of his people. Through them, he could enter their minds, communicating with them and through them. And these are essentially what would become the heart stones. And I think, again, going back to our Planeswalker series, when Zantcha first goes back to Phyrexia, she steals her heart stone and mm-hmm. gives it to Urza. And then Urza, you know, after she's dead, puts it in Karn, and mm-hmm. that's his, you know, sort of consciousness. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how much they changed from then to, you know, thousands of years later, but this is sort of the inception of them. But Glacian, like I said, Glacian was the only one left in the caves, and he was refusing any further treatment, again. So Yawgmoth suggested he may have finally deduced why his case was so different from everyone else's, and why he was unresponsive to every treatment they tried. he was probably just pouring all the medicine, like, into his wheelchair cushion the whole time, right? He's just like, I'm not taking this.
Yeah.
So, Yawgmoth suggested that a part of the power stone he'd been stabbed with had broken off from the larger piece that had been removed. Rebek agreed, despite Glacian's gurgling objections, and Yawgmoth quickly stabbed him in the neck with a powerful sedative. So that's how you always administer a sedative, just like, ah!
Yeah,
the
neck. Yeah. Yeah, get him, quick!
Then they turned him on his side, and Yawgmoth began to cut into the power stone wound. It had never fully healed, and even after 7 years... that's just a rough estimate. And as Yawgmoth dug deeper, he found a mass of pus, and in it, ugh, he discovered a tiny sliver of the power stone Gix had stabbed him with. He pulled it out, and before Rebek knew it, Yawgmoth was stitching him up, claiming that now the healing could begin.
Boy.
All that said, Glacian continued to remain in the quarantine caves, and Yawgmoth returned to Phyrexia while his empire crumbled on Dominaria. Like I mentioned earlier, another city loyal to Yawgmoth was in the crosshairs of the Thran Alliance, and it wasn't long before it fell as well, which left only Nyoron and Seton loyal to Halcyon. Man, I wonder how Chignon's doing. But by that point, Yawgmoth had little interest in maintaining the Empire. Using Glacian's designs, he had his artificers create devices known as stone chargers, massive power stones that, when detonated, absorbed the mana energy of everything in their radius, which was substantial. Chignon. Yawgmoth had ordered the creation of a slew of other weapons to fight his war, and so did the Alliance, and over the following few months, they fought on many fronts until the war reached its zenith. So, the Alliance, having done all it could to weaken Yawgmoth's forces, converged on Halcyon by air and by ground, by desert, actually, because they had to cross 200 miles of desert to reach the city, and so began the Battle of Mageddon Defile, the final conflict in the war. And that's where we'll pick back up for the conclusion of the Thran.
Nice.
Yeah, this, and I mean, like, I leave a lot of gross stuff out of these. Like, these, this book is, like, real gross. Like, with all, like, that surgery we just mentioned, it's a lot grosser than that.
Yeah, yeah, pus, so. Even that was, like, bleh.
Yeah. Well, pus is just yucky, right?
Yeah.
But it feels good to, like, squeeze something and get the pus out.
Sure.
Yeah. I think we all like the show Dr. Pimple Popper.
I don't know if
Riley's like, no, I don't like
that. It is quite popular.
Recently, like, I've enjoyed some earwax removal videos. Those are satisfying.
I like earwax removal. I like those.
Yeah.
I like those.
Those are satisfying. Because you know roughly what to expect.
Yeah. Yeah, disgusting, disgusting earwax. Yeah, so next time we're going to wrap this series up. We're going to find out the final fate of Glaceon and Rebek and the rest of the Thran Empire. Those familiar with magic's, you know, lore probably know Yawgmoth's final fate. Yeah, we'll be back in a couple weeks probably with the conclusion of this series. What do you guys have any predictions? You're good to give prediction because you don't know the story.
I know nothing.
Well, I feel like he's gonna complete his Phyrexians, right?
Well, yeah, that's where it's headed.
I feel like because Gix is still kicking.
Yeah.
And there's Glaceon.
Mm-hmm.
Glaceon.
Yeah, either way. Faze Voss.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see Glaceon like heal and. I guess become like a protagonist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he's just been a guy in a chair.
He's been, oh, what's going on?
gurgly gurgle.
Yeah, he sucks. Oh, man.
It'd be cool if he like made some kind of recovery and like.
I mean, it's pretty impressive that even though he's like half gone, he's still completing all these inventions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's an impressive guy. But yeah, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you everyone for listening. I gotta get out there and shovel.
Yeah. Ooh, I have one more prediction.
Oh yeah, sure.
Okay, I think that maybe like Yawgmoth is gonna be like, okay, Rebek, you can come with me. And maybe she rejects him and like that adds to his bad guy feeling.
Yeah, he's like, but I'm a nice guy.
How could you?
Like what happened with our friend there, who loved the angel.
Oh yeah, Krovax.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. We're gonna see him in the next book, Invasion.
Nice.
Neat.
Yeah, he's coming back with a vengeance.
I bet.
All right, everybody. Well, thank you for listening. Riley, Ainsley, thank you for your lovely voice performances. I had a great time.
Yeah, it's always fun.
We'll talk to you all next time.
See ya.
Bye, friends. Bye everybody.